Okay, you're listening to the Crass Files podcast, Saturday the 12th of March, 2016. This podcast is available from iTunes if you want to get it there, and also our website, which is crassfiles.com, C-R-A-Z-Z-O-S. Thanks to our listeners out there, throwing in a few dollars here and there to our PayPal account, really appreciate it. Thanks for listening each week, and we're also over on Facebook, under the Crass Files, and you can send us an email to thecrassfiles@yahoo.com.au if you'd like to. Thanks for listening. Okay, we're plugged in for another day. John Friends here from The Realist Report. John, thanks for coming back.
Yes, sir. Here I am. Thank you very much. Sorry, I had myself muted. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It's always always nice catching up with you. I love the work you guys are doing down under. So, yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's turning into a police state and a medical tyranny here.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's everywhere. I mean, it's
getting ugly here. It's getting ugly here, my friend. And, you know, it's worrying. It's worrying me where Australia's heading.
Yep.
That's for sure. It's really disturbing. So, you know, we're all trying our best to keep our civil liberties and our health freedoms, you know, our freedom of choice in this country, you know, our freedom as parents to choose what goes into our children's bodies, you know, without being dictated to by drug corporations and crony criminal governments. But you guys have got it as well. But I wanted to plug in with you today and just catch up with what you're doing. Because every time I see your stuff on Facebook, you're in a different part of the US. Going around all over the place. And you are following the Donald Trump campaign, which I find pretty fascinating. And as I was just telling you before, watching it here, we're not getting a lot. But I did see some main news reports the other night, and they were saying, bring it on. The main kind of Murdoch-controlled media spin in this country, they're kind of just doing the childish thing against him. You know, it's you know, that kind of silly, childish making fun of him. So you are getting that here, but we're not getting the sort of solid information on what's happening here. But when I last checked in, he seems to be steamrolling over all the opponents. And the reason why I like him is because he's funding himself. I really like that. And, you know, he seems to be his own man. But you're the one who's been following this guy in his campaign, and you went to Las Vegas. Fill us in with your travels and what's going on here, and some of your trips and those campaigns that you're seeing, and what you're seeing. I'm also seeing Hillary Clinton getting quite far, which is makes my skin crawl.
Indeed. Oh my gosh!
I don't know what's going on there. Why? What's wrong with Americans? She shouldn't even be in the race.
She's the worst, man. She's so bad. And speaking of Hillary Clinton, I recently had Victor Thorne on my radio program. You can find that in the archives over at therealistreport.com. And Victor has written a number of books about the Clinton crime family, and that's exactly what they are. And he recently published a book entitled, I think it's called Crowning Clinton, Why Hillary Should Not Be in the White House, or something along those lines. And, you know, I interviewed him recently and we talked all about it. And yeah, she's just a disgrace. I mean, she should be behind bars, and yet she's running for president and actually, you know, getting support from some people. It's incredible. But no, yeah, man, I've been very busy the past four months or so. Well, really, I mean, once I was sort of forced out of my job with the city, I really made a decision that, look, I got to do this full time. And, you know, I want to, I've sort of been able to, at least for the time being. I set up a membership feature to my website, which gives people access to exclusive members only content. So most of my radio programs are free. But in many cases, I'll do a second segment, which is only for subscribers only.
That's a good idea. That's what Red Ice does.
Yeah. It's sort of similar to Red Ice. I do offer a lifetime membership, which is sort of a unique feature. And, you know, that's obviously what I would encourage people to, you know, to take advantage of. You know, you just pay a one-time fee. Right now it's $100. I originally set it up and it was only $75. And, you know, I increased it to $100 on March 1st, which I announced, you know, weeks or months even in advance that I was going to do. So, yeah, right now, we got about 112 or 113 subscribers, the vast majority of whom are lifetime members. So, you know, I just want to thank everybody who has subscribed and who has supported my work. You know, it's really, you know, humbling for sure. And, you know, it's allowed me to do a lot of things. You know, I not only do a lot of the stuff on my website, the podcasts and the blog posts and whatnot. But I also write for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. So I've been very busy with that. As you mentioned, I was out at a Trump rally. And you know what? I'm trying to remember when that was. I think it was either late December or early January. I can't remember. But even before that, I took a trip up to San Bernardino to do sort of an independent investigation into the alleged shooting that took place up there. I'm sure you remember that story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, I live in San Diego, California, so it wasn't even that far of a drive. You know, it's like maybe not even 2 hours. It's like maybe an hour and a half or so, you know, give or take with traffic. And that was an interesting experience for sure. One of my good friends and I drove up there for a day and did a lot of interviews with people. We went right to the location where this alleged shooting took place, and you know, we basically confirmed my original suspicions that this entire thing was, you know, sort of a media hoax. And I think it certainly was, at least to a large extent. You know, and this is something that you'll find all the time, you know, when you start investigating these alleged mass shootings and these alleged quote unquote terrorist attacks that take place in America, like the Boston bombing, for example. You'll discover that, you know, what the media tells us what happened is not true at all. And there's really no evidence to support what the media and what the government are saying about these very traumatizing and, you know, monumental events, these very high profile events. So that was cool. I was able to go up there. I went to a Trump rally, as you mentioned, interviewed some people there and got to see Donald speak. And we can talk more about Trump, you know, in a few minutes. But I was also out in I went to Oregon. I covered the Oregon standoff. Me and another friend of mine in Southern California, we drove up there. Boy, that was a long drive. That was like a 20-hour drive.
Must be a beautiful place there.
You know, it was cool. Yeah. It was a really cool experience. we went up there, did some interviews with some of the key people involved in that whole, you know, standoff situation that was taking place, including Lavoie Finicum. And Lavoie Finicum is the gentleman that was shot and killed.
So what happened there for our listeners who – I was looking at that, but I didn't know much about it. What happened there? Just a quick catch-up on that event.
Yeah, so the whole thing revolved around this ranching family in Oregon, and it's called Harney County is the name of the county. It's this big county up in Oregon. Most of the land, the vast majority of the land in the county, is owned by the federal government. And, you know, ranchers up there, a lot of them do have their own private land, but they also, they use some of this federal land, and they get permits to allow their cattle to go out there and graze, and they help maintain the land and whatnot. So the whole thing revolves around this family, and they had a history of having run-ins and having conflicts and having problems with the various federal entities that manage this land on behalf of the federal government. And I'm talking specifically about the Bureau of Land Management and secondarily the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And there's this big national wildlife refuge, right in this county. And of course, that's managed by the federal government, by the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And this family had been, they'd been having issues with these organizations for years. They were accused of starting fires illegally and damaging federal land and federal property. It's sort of a long story, but in a nutshell, the father and the son of this ranching family, they were convicted, they were charged by the federal prosecutor in the county of violating an anti-terrorism law for starting these fires that were unauthorized and technically illegal. And they ended up, the judge, they went to trial, the judge ended up finding them guilty. The minimum sentence was 5 years in prison, and the judge determined that given the circumstances of this particular case, that was cruel and unusual punishment, he determined, the five-year sentence. So he sentenced the father to 3 months in prison, and he sentenced the son to 1 year in prison. And this ranching, these two ranchers, they did their time. They went to prison. They got out. Roughly 6 months after the son got out, the federal prosecutor appealed the original judge's decision and said, look, these guys got to go to prison for 5 years. That's the minimum sentence for this crime that they were found guilty of. And so with the appeal process, it was determined that, yes, these guys do have to go back to prison to serve the rest of their term. And that's really what led to this whole thing. This ranching family, they were called oh my gosh, I forget the name of the family now. But anyways, they were consulted by a number of sort of constitutional type groups and the militia, the American militia, and the Bundy family. And the Bundy family is this other iconic ranching family from Nevada, who had a big standoff with the federal government back in 2014. And these guys got involved, and it turned into this big thing. The family ended up surrendering and going back to serve the rest of their time. And Bundy, the Bundys and some of the people that were supporting them, they ended up taking over and occupying this reserve, this natural wildlife reserve, or refuge, I think it's called, that was owned and operated by the federal government. So that's really what it was all about. And it sort of, got out of control. And one of the guys ended up getting shot and killed. I've written about this extensively for American Free Press. And you can find all of these articles on my website as well. I have a section where I post all of my AFP articles, my American Free Press articles, that appear on their website. So I sort of just cross-post them, and you guys can find it there. There's also a tag on my site, the Oregon Standoff, where you can find all of my coverage of this situation, of this event. And it's something that's still going on to a certain extent today. A lot of these guys were arrested, and they're facing federal charges.
Sounds like a war against American farming families.
Well, really, it is. Yeah. I mean, that's really a good way of looking at it. I mean, I think it's a bit more nuanced than that. But yeah, I mean, I think that is really sort of a good way of framing it. And it's really a tragic situation. I mean, this guy that got shot and killed by the Oregon State Police was really, I mean, and I interviewed him, you know, I got a chance to meet him and talk to him for a little bit. And, you know, I'd seen him in other press conferences and in other interviews. And I was very impressed with him. He seemed very genuine and very honest and very honorable. And, you know, he was standing up for what he believed in. And, you know, he paid the ultimate price for it.
Yeah, they don't like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Standing up for what you believe in.
So, yeah, I mean, I was up there. I covered that. I've been following that really since the beginning of the year, since early January when it first got started. Yeah, so I've been staying busy with that. I was out in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to cover a conference that was organized by Matthew Heimbach, who's the chairman of the Traditionalist Worker Party. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Matthew Heimbach or if your listeners are, but he sort of caused a lot of controversy back when he was in college. He went to a school called Towson University, which is right outside Baltimore, Maryland, and he organized a white student union. You know, we have all these Jewish student unions, we have Asian student unions, black student unions. So he organized a white student
That's
union.
That's just evil, John.
I know, right, yeah. Mm. So he's like, you know, automatically, you know, characterized as this white supremacist, you know, bigoted Nazi hater, of course, by the mass media and by the leftist establishment. So that's really how he kind of got on the map. And, you know, he's a really an honorable and courageous guy. I'm very impressed with him. I actually recently interviewed him, and I'm going to be posting it on my website in the next couple of days. So I went out there and covered that conference. It was in, as I mentioned, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is the state capital of Pennsylvania. And it was a good time. I got a chance to meet Matt. I had never met him before. You know, I'd basically just talked to him and interviewed him, you know, using Skype or on this, you know, on a telephone or whatever. So it was good to meet him in person. I met a number of other individuals out there as well. It was a good time. It was a good conference, good turnout. And then just this, I guess it was a week ago, today actually, I was in Washington, D.C. I flew out there to attend the NPI conference. They do, I think they do two annual conferences. They might do more. I know they definitely do two annual ones. They do a winter conference, and then they do sort of like a fall conference. And this year, the one I recently attended was the winter conference, and it was held at the Ronald Reagan Building, which is right in downtown Washington, D.C. And the topic was identity politics, and, you know, Donald Trump was front and center, you know, throughout most of the conference. Ramsey Paul, who is a YouTube commentator, he's pretty popular on YouTube. He has thousands of subscribers. He puts out some pretty good and insightful commentary, and often it's quite humorous as well. And so he spoke. He opened up the conference and gave a speech, which was really entertaining and pretty insightful, as I said. And then Dr. Kevin McDonald spoke as well.
I saw your interview with him. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then Richard Spencer concluded the speeches, and Dr. McDonald and Spencer were really focused on the Trump phenomenon and how that's changed American politics. And yeah, when I was out there, I picked up a new camera recently, and I've been doing more and more video interviews and covering events, you know, and offering some video footage as well. And I got a chance to sit down with Kevin McDonald and interview him. I also interviewed Pete Papaheraklis. When I was out in Washington, D.C., Pete actually lives right outside of Washington, D.C., and he also writes for American Free Press and contributes to the Barnes Review, which is the historical magazine that's affiliated with the newspaper. So he's a good friend of mine. I've known him for a number of years. I actually stayed at his house the last time I was in Washington, D.C., so I know Pete really well, and I did an interview with him using the new camera, and it turned out pretty good. I mean, it's kind of one of those things that you gotta kind of practice with it and get used to it and figure out how it all works and everything. So that was really kind of what I was trying to do. But we did have a really good conversation, I think. So I was busy out in D.C. It was a good experience, a good time. Got to see some friends that I know out there, and I also took a video of as I was approaching the NPI conference. I turned on my camera because there was a ton of protesters outside. a ton of you know, anti-racist and Antifa and anarchist protesters. And you know, I wanted to film this and put it up on YouTube just to show, you know, how hostile and vitriolic and really nasty these people are.
Yeah.
And it was kind of interesting because when I walked up there, I was filming and I wanted to see, you know, hear what they had to say and you know, get footage of some of their signs and stuff. And these guys didn't realize that I was going to the conference, at least not at first. And you know, it was kind of funny looking back on it, because here I am, you know, I'm sort of dressed, you know, pretty nice, and you know, I'm this white guy, so I of course I've got to be some racist, you know,
or a terrorist,
or a terrorist, right? And so once they discovered that I was going into the conference and that I was quote unquote one of them. And this old lady actually said that. She goes, "Oh, is he one of them?" As if I'm some, you know, some terrorist, as you said. And once they found out that I was actually going to the conference, things, you know, heated up very quickly. And one old lady, she actually punched me. She hit me in my back.
Crikeys.
Yeah, yeah. And then a bunch of the other protesters, they all just surrounded me immediately. Jeez. And were sort of trying to prevent me from moving and from getting into the conference. So it was really an interesting experience. I mean, it probably wasn't the smartest decision I've ever made, but you know, I'm glad that I was able to get some footage of this and to show what these people are really like.
They get into his speeches, yeah, don't they? Into Trump's speeches. I've seen them on the TV. He just tells them, well, to kick them out, you know?
Exactly.
They're pretty,
yeah,
pretty angry.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's something that I definitely want to talk about, because we're seeing with the Trump candidacy, we're seeing the increasing polarization of American society. And the people that are against Trump, they are very vicious. They're very nasty. Truly, they truly are hateful. They hate this man. They hate what he represents. They hate his supporters. They view Trump supporters as white supremacists and as racists and as Nazis even. I mean, there's been countless you know, high-profile political commentators and comedians and celebrities and whatnot who have basically said that Donald Trump is the new Adolf Hitler.
I've seen that, yeah.
I mean, it's absurd, yeah.
It, how low can you go? I mean, they're really scraping the bottom of the barrel there, aren't they?
Oh, totally, yeah, totally. And
well, that comes from fear, John, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Obviously scared of him, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Scared of what he represents, scared of some of the policies that he's boldly championing, including deporting, you know, all the illegal Mexicans and well, just illegal immigrants in general that have flooded our country. But one thing they've done recently, Trump was at a rally down in Florida, and he asked the crowd to raise their hands and to promise to vote for him. And the Jews are out there saying that Trump was, you know, giving a fascist Nazi-style salute and said, you know, encouraging his supporters to do the same. I mean, they're really desperate.
I saw that, it's, yeah.
Yeah, the way they're trying to demonize this man, the way they're trying to discredit this man, it's very transparent and it's very blatant.
So he supports Israel in quite a number of ways, doesn't he? Anyway, so I can't. I mean, I've heard him talk about it. That he sounds pretty supportive of them, but here they are attacking him on the other side of the coin,
right.
Saying this.
Yeah,
stuff. I mean, I haven't heard him say anything that would be considered hateful or anything like that. You know, I think he's just very honest, and I think I find that very refreshing, because you just don't see that in politics today. You know, that the way he just comes out and just punches, you know, with that iron fist. He doesn't hold back, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's very good
and
to see.
That's why he's resonating so deeply with so many people across this country, because he's
a classic.
Say it again.
He's a classic. He's such a rich, powerful guy, but he just comes off as an ordinary bloke, as we would say in Australia, you know, because of
he
doesn't hold back, as I said. Yeah, I sort of see him as just this ordinary guy, but here he is about to be the, you know, president of the United States. I think he appeals to a lot of people. I really believe that. I think they find it refreshing that we're seeing someone. Maybe his mouth gets him into trouble here and there. But I think that's, from what I can gather, most people find that very refreshing that we're seeing this, because we ain't seeing it here in Australia. and in many places, you know. And to see this in the United States is really different. I haven't seen anything really like this in my life. It's quite exciting to follow now, you know. It is.
I mean, frankly, it is.
I'm not a political sort of man, but this is pretty exciting. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And see, that's the thing. I mean, I've been impressed with Trump's campaign from the very beginning. Because if you remember, when he announced that he was going to run for president, he was talking about, he was bringing up a number of very marginalized and taboo topics, especially as they relate to immigration. I mean, he was openly saying that he wanted to build a wall on the southern border. And again, he wanted to deport all these illegal aliens that have invaded our country.
Excellent.
Two entirely legitimate and rational public policy proposals, given the circumstances that we find ourselves in America.
Israel, and, good, you know?
Right, exactly.
Australia's really brutal. Really brutal with that. They go to sort of, detention centers.
Right.
You know, here.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what's, yeah, I think that's what, you're right. Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic that he's come out. It's got to be plugged. That hole's got to be plugged. It can't continue in the United States just flooding in like that. It ain't going to work.
Well, and really all he's saying is that we need to enforce our laws. Our laws have been right. Yeah. Yeah. We have pretty solid immigration laws on the books as it is. They just haven't been being enforced because we have a political establishment that puts the interests of foreigners and of illegals and of Jews and other minorities ahead of the interests of the American people.
That's really so unfair, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and Donald Trump is making this very clear. This is exactly what's going on, and it's unacceptable. And people are fed up with it. It's a very positive development in my mind. I mean, what he's doing, even if you don't necessarily trust him, and think he, you know, might be some shill or something like that, at the very least, he's opening up space for our ideas. He is really discrediting the mainstream political establishment, especially the Republican Party. He is discrediting the mass media, who have been hysterically attacking him and doing everything in their power to discredit him. And, you know, he's just demonstrating that, you know, he is the one in charge. He's handling the media very well. He's handling his campaign very well. And, you know, I think he will be our next president.
Wow. That's a big statement. I'm thinking that as well. But I agree with everything you said. I think it's, you can't go to Muslim countries and other countries around the world and just do what you want, you know? You've got to be respectful of their laws. In Muslim countries, you have to dress like they do, women as well. You're going to get in a lot of trouble. You know, I've heard of Australians being arrested in Dubai for swearing on the street. Many of these countries have very, very strict laws in regards to immigration and what goes on there. But because we're white Western countries, we're just meant to let everybody in, you know, without even saying anything. And if we do say anything, we're racist, which is ridiculous.
It's
refreshing, as I said, that he's come out and at least said that, you know?
Exactly.
Because I didn't think anyone was going to say that. Not in the United States.
No,
you know?
No one has said it except for Trump.
It's pretty
He's the only one. Yeah. He is the one that is bringing up these issues. And if it weren't for him, none of this would be, you know, would be mainstream political discourse now.
What happened to your country, John? You know, it's the last few years, it's just really staggering to see the United States in such a mess. I don't think we have any choice. I think that it has to be Trump. There's no other way.
Right.
The Americans are going to seriously consider Hillary Clinton. This guy's the only way. I think this is the only way out for America. I think it's the, I think the time's come.
Well, and he's got, I mean, his campaign slogan is brilliant: "Make America Great Again."
That's right.
Who doesn't want to make America great again, right?
You guys have got a great country. It's a shame. You know, no one wants to see it go down the toilet like that. These criminal scumbags just absolutely trash it, you know? It's amazing. Donald Trump, I can see here with the new U.S. election, ABC News is in trouble again. he's come under fire at a debate in Florida. Have you seen this? For saying Muslims hate the United States. But it's also mentioning here the nomination battle going on for Florida and Ohio on Tuesday, and that he could win that as well.
Yeah, that's right. And that's
Ohio is a big one.
Yeah. Ohio and Florida, those are both huge primaries.
You think he could take those?
Well, yeah. I mean, based on the polls that I've seen, yeah, I think he will take them. And, he's been dominating basically. You know, he's pretty much won every state. I mean, you know, he hasn't won every state, but he's done well in every state, and he has won the majority of them. I mean, he's leading in the nomination. I think he will be the GOP nominee unless they screw him, you know, and steal the vote from him or steal the nomination from him. In which case, I'd like to think that he'd run independently of the GOP, because the GOP establishment, the Republican establishment, they are doing everything in their power to prevent him from legitimately winning the nomination. They're all attacking him. Everyone in the GOP is, at least in the establishment. And what's incredible is that the base of the Republican Party absolutely love him. They totally support him. So we have the party leadership going against their own base, once again demonstrating how absurd American politics really is.
It's crazy. And could I get your opinion on his tariffs that he's talking about? Because this is pretty cool. We've gone the other way here with the free trade deals and stuff. But they're talking about this debate that went on for a few hours. It was pretty somber. And he's talking about immigration and this tariff. And he's talking about a 45% tariff rate on imports from countries like China to encourage the production of goods on American soil. And they're saying that, oh, this is going to bring up prices for Americans on the ground there with the products they buy. But someone has to do this, right? Because, you know, it may hurt at the start, but if more products can be made in the United States, then that's a great way to make the country great again like it used to be, you know, because Australia's like that, you know. We shear our wool here, for example, and then we send it to China and they make garments and we buy it back. And now they're buying up all our dairy and our land, buying up all our products. Everything now in Australia comes from China when we used to make everything. You know, like the Americans did. A lot of old Australian families, from shoes to car manufacturers to everything, they've all gone offshore now. Some of the greatest products in the world have left, and now we're getting these poor sort of products, cheaper looking sort of products that they're still selling back to us. But what do you think on this tariff and what he's talking about here with imports from China and starting to make products in America again? Can it be done?
Well, it absolutely can be done if we had the political will to do so. And I think Donald Trump is proving that he does have the political will to do these things. And not only as it relates to this free trade stuff, but also as it relates to immigration.
Also, the influx of foreign workers into the United States. That's what they're doing here.
Right.
You know, with these free trade deals, it allows the Chinese companies to come in and build apartment buildings or whatever they want and actually bring in their own workers and bypass our labor system here, our tradesmen. Plumbers, electricians, carpenters, they're all going to lose out because of this free trade deal that's done here. You know, the TPP. Trans-Pacific Partnership. Yeah, Australian prime ministers can't wait to sign off on that. They're down on their knees groveling, you know, like dogs, you know. And, you know, it's really sad for Australia. It's a sad time. And so that's why I saw this. You know, he's also talking about this influx of foreign workers into the United States. These workers who are coming there and taking jobs when they shouldn't really be doing that. America should be creating jobs for its own people like we should be. So he's mentioning that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and see, that's the thing. I mean, he is bringing up so many crucial issues.
Many, yeah.
Yeah. And this whole thing with his critique of free trade, this to me is so obvious. I mean, every politician should be talking about this, because we've seen how destructive globalization has been to really everyone, to all nation states, to all workers. The only people that it has benefited are these globalists and these international capitalists that make all the money off these free trade deals. They're very destructive. They undermine national sovereignty. They undermine your economy. And you know, Trump is basically saying this. I wish he would be a little bit more specific. You know, in particular about like NAFTA, for example, which was a free trade agreement that was signed, I think, under Bill Clinton. But I mean, generally speaking, his critiques of free trade are spot on. And you know, again, this is something that no one else would be talking about. I mean, no one else is bringing up these topics except for Donald Trump. And I think it's something that could be done. You know, it might take some negotiating, and thank God that Donald Trump is a brilliant negotiator. I mean, that's what he does for a living. And really, see, that's the thing. He's framing his whole campaign in terms of, look, we're going to do what's best for America for once. We're going to do what's best for our country, for our people, for our workers, for our economy. We're not going to let our country be exploited by illegal aliens or by anybody else, by other countries. We're going to put America first, and we're going to make America great again. And I mean, that is really just a brilliant campaign strategy. And I think the guy is genuine in what he says. I think he really does want to make America great again. I think he's seen, and there's some interesting, you know, videos that you can watch on YouTube that kind of, you know, chronicle his past statements and some, you know, some political statements he's made, you know, when he was younger and you know, in the 90s and stuff. And he's always talking about the same thing. He always has the same message. Look, we want to make we're for America. We want to do what's best for our country. And there's nothing wrong with that. And the way the media has attacked him, the way the political establishment has attacked him, the way the organized Jewish community has attacked him is demonstrating that Donald Trump is a major threat to this tyrannical government and to this tyrannical system in general in the United States. Let me give you one thing. And see, this is just one of many examples. In the first GOP debate, I don't know if you remember this, but in all of these debates that Trump participates in, the people asking the questions and the other candidates, they always gang up on Trump and try to you know, they try to stump the Trump, and it never works, of course. But they always gang up on him, and they always try to ask him loaded questions or discredit him in one way or another, or just outright attack him. And in the first debate, Megyn Kelly asked him a question about his comments about women or something like that. And Donald Trump, in front of millions of people were watching this debate, and millions more watched, you know, the archives and on YouTube and everything else. Donald Trump stood up there and said, political correctness is destroying America. I don't have time for total political correctness. I need to say what needs to be said. What a revolutionary statement to make. I mean, truly, I really think that that was a very revolutionary statement for Donald Trump to make. And the more I think about it, the more I realize how powerful of a thing, you know, for him to say, or you know, how powerful that was for him to say in the way he said it. So, I mean, he clearly represents a major threat to this whole agenda, to the neocons. We've seen the neocons attack him recently, saying that he's going to make America less safe, for goodness sakes. Yeah, we're going to make America less safe by closing our border. I mean, give me a break. Even if you accept the official narrative of San Bernardino and many of these other events, I mean, you know, closing our border and ending, you know, immigration from the third world and from other parts of the, you know, from the Middle East and whatnot, this is definitely going to make America more safe. I mean, especially if you buy the official narrative of these events, because these people who are allegedly committing these terrorist attacks are being let in by, you know, by our own immigration policies.
They're definitely panicking. I picked up a article yesterday from John Rappaport. And the heading here is "Vampire Technocrats Fly to Jekyll Island to Stop Trump." So this place is where the Jekyll Island, it's called, where the Federal Reserve was born, has its own TSA there. And they're talking about Apple CEO Tim Cook, Google co-founder Larry Page, Napster creator and Facebook investor Sean Parker, Tesla Motors and SpaceX honcho Elon Musk all attended this. And the main goal was to bring down this cowboy Trump. That's what they're talking about here. And I put another article from Press TV on your Facebook page, "Entire U.S. Establishment Plotting to Defeat Trump. This is from an analyst, Stephen D. Kelly. He's a former CIA NSA contractor. He said the entire U.S. establishment is plotting to defeat Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump because the maverick billionaire poses a threat to the New World Order. This right. is full it's, on, man.
Yes.
My
yes.
goodness. If they're going to Jekyll Island to plot against him, Jesus, man. You know, this is...
Oh, no, I hear you. Yeah, it's very clear. It's very, very obvious. I mean, these people are hysterical in their, you know, their attacks on Donald Trump. And there's so many examples. I try to document some of the more... egregious ones that I can find, certainly coming from the organized Jewish community, and
these
from
the Zionists,
you know,
as well, John, that are attacking him.
Well, yeah. The neocons in particular.
Yeah.
The neocons, the people that were responsible for 9/11, for example, Michael Chertoff and Robert Kagan and many others, they are the ones that are the most vicious and hysterical in their denunciations of Donald Trump. And I've written about this. You can find articles on my website in the News from the Jews column. Just scroll through there and you'll see what I'm talking about. They are terrified of a Donald Trump presidency. And I mean, think about some of the comments that Trump himself has made about 9/11 and you know, the global war on terrorism in general. He has, you know, basically said that the war in Iraq is and it was a total disaster. It was based on lies and literally manufactured fraudulent quote unquote intelligence. You know, he's made some interesting comments about 9/11, and in particular he was talking about how Muslims were celebrating, you know, on the day of 9/11 in New York City, which was, I mean, I think that there are some actually legitimate reports that did happen. Certainly not on the scale that I think Trump was talking about, but I mean, I think there were some cases of that. But even more importantly, there were Israelis who were actually Mossad agents who were posing as Arab terrorists. They, in fact, definitely were celebrating on 9/11, and we can prove that. There's all sorts of evidence to show that. So it was an interesting comment for him to make. And I don't know if you saw this one, but a guy named Martin Hill, who I've interviewed him on the Realist Report. He attended a Trump rally back shortly after Trump made these comments about these Muslims celebrating on 9/11. He attended a Trump rally and actually interrupted Trump speaking and said, "Trump, it was Jews arrested on 9/11, not Muslims." And the way Trump handled it was very interesting. He didn't denounce him. He didn't demand that he be thrown out or something like that. He said, "Oh, this guy down here, he has high energy. He's a Trump guy. He's a Trump supporter." That's what he was saying in response to this guy. So I'd like to think, maybe this is wishful thinking on my part, but I would like to think that Trump knows a lot more than he lets on, maybe about events like 9/11 and you know, other issues. But I think the guy knows what's going on. I think he knows the score, and I think he's operating very effectively. He's handling the media very well. You know, he's a professional, man. This is what he does.
He's good.
He's a showman. I mean, he really is.
Doesn't come off swami, you know. He doesn't come off like a smartass. He's just very blunt.
Well, he is, yeah. and people, you know, in my experience, the people that hate Trump, that you know, just blindly literally hate this man, their reaction is emotional. And it is driven by the media.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the media shapes the minds.
Exactly. They haven't sat down and watched Trump speak or objectively entertained, you know, some of his public policy positions. They are just so hysterical and anti-Trump because, as you said, the media has shaped their minds.
Absolutely. It's like they shoot these newspapers like poison arrows through the minds of the population, you know, and it just takes them over like zombies, and that's what they believe, but they don't actually look into anything for themselves. They just, you know, believe what the media says, and most of the media are full of trolls, you know.
Right.
They don't go and have a look for themselves. That's exactly what happened on 9/11. The media were telling the people all around the world what was happening, bit by bit. No one was stepping back and having a look for themselves. They were just telling you, you know? And that's what they do.
That's right.
And I see it here as well. They definitely do that. Yeah, just demonize him and make fun of him. But it's like, okay, well, all right, but show us what's going on with the elections over there. Give us some proper reporting. Aren't you reporters?
Well, and see, it's interesting that you say that because originally when Trump first announced his candidacy, the media and you know, the elite establishment in general, they were basically saying that Trump is not a serious candidate. He's like this clown that's doing this for his ego.
Yeah, exactly.
And then once it became clear that, you know, Trump is, you know, a serious candidate and people are, you know, supporting him and he's making a lot of valid points, now they're really just trying to discredit him by tying him to David Duke, for example. You know, David Duke didn't even endorse Trump. He just, you know, made some supportive statements of his candidacy and of some of the issues that he's talking about. And then the next thing you know, the media is saying that David Duke and you know, a former Klansman is endorsing Donald Trump and Donald Trump needs to denounce this. And, you know, it's one thing after another, you know, in their attempts to discredit him. And it's just not working. And it's not working because Donald Trump is a bold man. He's courageous. He has a backbone, and he's not going to back down.
He's got his own money,
and he's got his own money.
That's what I like. He just doesn't care with his airplane. He's a classic, you know. He doesn't rely on their funding. You know, he does it himself. That's really different as well. You know, you don't see that a lot.
Exactly. And speaking of that, did you catch when he was at the? I think it was called the Republican Jewish Coalition. It was basically a group of big-time Jewish donors to the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And he spoke there, and, you know, all the other candidates spoke there as well. And, of course, they're pledging their undying loyalty to the Jews and, you know, we love Israel and we'll give Israel, you know, trillions of dollars. I mean, basically, yeah. These people are such slaves and such traitors to these Jews. It's just so infuriating, man. So yeah. Infuriating. And Trump gets up there and he's like, look, you guys don't want me to get the nomination because you can't control me. I don't want any of your money. That's basically what he told these Jews.
Great, isn't it? Yeah.
How awesome is that?
I've heard him say that. I don't want your money.
Yeah.
He called him out, didn't he, at one of his conferences where all the other candidates are getting all these funding. They were bagging him a bit. And I remember him saying that, something like that. I can't remember exactly what, but he was talking about it. You know,
that's the thing. I mean, Trump is discrediting the political establishment. He's discrediting the mass media. I mean, every single speech he gives, he's criticizing the media and how they're handling and treating him. And you know, he's basically saying, look, I was a billionaire. I was a businessman, I should say. And I've had to deal with all of these politicians, the Republicans and the Democrats. And I know how the game is played. I know how corrupt this system is. And I participated in it because I had to. That's how I had to get things done. I supported Clinton, for example. I supported Republicans, for example. And I know how these things are done. I know these people are bought and paid for. They have no spines. They have no backbones. They have no core principles. And he's exposing this.
That's what's so great about
openly.
It.
Yeah, he's being honest about this. He's saying, look, this is wrong, and I'm not going to be this way. I'm independent. I'm for America. I'm trying to make America great again, and I'm trying to do what's right for our country and for our people. And that's what scares the establishment, is they cannot control this guy.
And the media's just become so low, John, and it's you know, it's like your American Freedom Press and these things starting to pop up. I'm hoping that if you get a Donald Trump win, we may start to see the new media come forward. And, you know, and these old dinosaur media, you know, they just become so low and so desperate. And it got so used to acting in such a vindictive and vicious manner that it's become the norm for them. So this might wake them all up, and you're going to need good reporting in the United States if this guy gets into into the White House, you know. You're going to need proper reporting, and these these scumbag trolls in the media out there. How long are they going to last once he gets in? Are they going to turn around and start sucking up to him? You know, because that's what the media do, don't they, you know?
Or are they just going to keep attacking him
once he wins, you know? It's hard to say.
Well, I think you will certainly see a lot of people attacking him regardless.
Yeah, just keep it going.
This is why what I think he's doing is so important, because it's giving he's not only opening up the political discourse and talking about these very important issues. He is he's giving space to our ideas, and he's discrediting the whole system. And people are realizing, look at the way the media is treating him. People are recognizing this. People that don't even pay attention to politics, they can't help but notice how, hostile the media is towards Donald Trump. And they're scratching their heads. They're like, why is everyone ganging up on Donald Trump? He must be saying something important. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And that is so huge. This is such a revolutionary time we're living in,
I think. It really is.
And, I feel so blessed just to, to be here and to be on the front lines of this and to really be participating in it. And, I'm so confident that, our message will ultimately prevail. Our cause will ultimately prevail. And I'm not saying that Donald Trump is, some white nationalist or something like that. But I think what he's doing is very good for our cause. And I hope to take advantage of that, frankly. And, I want to get him in the White House, but I want to push it even a step further and talk about some other more important – not more important issues, but other important issues and, really get things straightened out here in America and in the wider Western white world.
Yeah. I'm wondering if he gets in over there, it'll ricochet and cause problems here, and we may get change as well. Because I don't know how he's going to get on with our guy. Political parties are upper sames. It's the same thing. Liberal Labor, that's all we get. It's a joke. But this guy, he's really smashed this whole stagnant system with a sledgehammer, hadn't he? he's throwing a spanner in the works big time. So it's great to watch as an outsider. I'm really enjoying watching this. And I must admit, a few months back, I thought, what's going on here? But now... this is getting really interesting as we get to the end here. So, I hope he does it.
Yep. I think he will. I predicted at the beginning of this year that I think Trump is going to be in the White House when it's all said and done. And I stand by that.
So when does all this happen? When are the elections for the United States?
Well, the general election isn't until November. So there's still a number of primaries, which basically the primary process is how the candidates are determined from each party, who actually gets the nomination, who gets to run in the general election. And I think Trump has a very good shot at winning the Republican nomination to actually go and run in the general election. If he doesn't win it, I'd like to think that he would run independent. I think at this point he probably has the GOP nomination locked up, given how much support he has. And see, this is the thing. I interviewed a guy named Jim Condit Jr. on my radio program, and he's followed the vote fraud issue very well in the United States.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we were talking about is, how can Donald Trump prevent, the election being stolen from him? And I'd like Donald Trump to actually go out and say, hey, look, we have some vote fraud issues here. I want to make sure that, this is all legitimate. I don't know if he'll do that. But at the very least, I think that he has the potential to gain so much support, gain so much popularity. And we see this. A lot, millions of people are supporting Donald Trump. It would be so he would have so much support, so much popular support that it would basically be impossible for them to steal the election without it being so blatantly obvious. And the way American society is becoming polarized, the anti-Trump people are so vicious and so hateful. I'm not saying I'm predicting violence, but I could certainly see violence. I think we've already seen violence in the past, you know, not even in the past, but just at recent Trump rallies, you know, people are trying to disrupt the events. They're confronting people. They're becoming hostile and violent in some cases. And I think this is only going to increase as the election season rolls on here.
Yeah. And let's just hope that that exposes them, what they're doing, more.
Right.
Because that shouldn't be happening, you know? It should be a fair run. Why act violent and nasty, you know? I mean, it seems like they've got something to fear, you know? Seems like they're so threatened. That's why they're acting out in that way.
Well, they very much are threatened. I think that's clear.
All right, John, good to catch up with you on this. Is therealistreport.com the best place for folks to track you down?
Yeah. Therealistreport.com, that's my main website. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, and you can find me on Twitter and Facebook, but just by going to my website. You'll see it right there on the right-hand sidebar. There's a contact page on my website. I'm very easy to get in touch with, very accessible, so... Yeah, feel free to send me a message, you know, follow my website. There's a subscribe by email feature right there at the very top, and that will notify you when new posts go up on the website. That's a good way to stay in touch. And yeah, man, I'm definitely staying busy. Got some big plans in the future. And, you know, it's just good to be alive and good to be doing this. I think these are truly revolutionary times we're living in, and it's just awesome to be a part of it all.
I think so, too. I think the change has already begun. It's a spiritual change as well. And it's already rolling out.
Absolutely.
And it's going to make a lot of people uncomfortable, and it's going to make them act out if they're not ready to accept this change. It's a vibrational thing. It goes right down into your cells of your body. You know, things are changing. And it's, you know, it may get uglier before we get good change. That's always expected. But I think this change is coming. I think this is a reflection of that, a big one. To see this happening in the U.S., it's astounding, really. So I'm backing this guy now. You know, I think this is an exciting change for all of us.
We might need to get you to come over here to California to come vote for Trump, because it's probably going to be a tough sell in this state.
California, yeah. Who's the person there that they want? Who are they voting for?
Oh, I mean, it's such a Democrat state. You know, they'll probably go for Sanders or Clinton. They'll go for whoever the Democrat nominee is. Well, I mean, who knows? I mean, Trump has really thrown a wrench in everything.
That's what I mean. Yes.
You know, you might see some independents and some...
that's what we want,
you know, some genuine Democrats who care about labor and who care about the working man to vote for Trump, because he's the only one standing up for him.
That's exactly right, you know. That was all taken away in Australia, our Democratic parties, everything. But we are having a comeback here. We're getting change here as well. And I can't understand why Americans don't want this change. Even if you don't agree with the man or everything he says, it represents a good change for that country. You know, I mean, we just got the same old vicious circle, John, for just... decades and decades with these same families and ruling elites running the show, and it's just tiring, and everybody's got to be sick of that now, you know, really sick of it.
Well, let me tell you right now, people do support Trump. Millions of people support. He has in my view,
worldwide.
I mean, he really does. Yeah, worldwide, but I mean, tons of Americans support this guy, and I mean, he is going to be the next president. Mark my words.
I think so too. Well, time will tell, eh?
That's right.
All right.
So, well, hey, man, thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, good to catch up.
Yeah, always nice chatting with you. Yeah, I appreciate it.
We'll catch up again sometime soon. And you're on Facebook as well, John Friend. I'm connected with you there. Lots of good stories going up there and what you're up to and pictures, so people can check that out.
That's right. You know what? And actually, it's facebook.com/realistreport. That's where you can find my profile. Same thing with Twitter, twitter.com/realistreport.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you soon.